which my Yanomami people have been mistreated, and they have allowed disease to come in. They've allowed us to die. They've allowed 577 of our children to die. So you, or the role of the Minister of Justice, that's who decides. I'm not going to decide, because the crime that he created against my Yanomami people, well, it's the federal constitution that says that it is criminal to carry out genocide. So he could go to jail so that he could learn to respect my people, so he could learn to respect the cultural heritage of my people and of all Brazil.
Davi Kopanawa Yanomami, leader and shaman for the Yanomami people, one of the largest indigenous tribes in Brazil. He won the Right Livelihood Award in 2019 with the Hutucara Yanomami Association. We spoke to him last Thursday, just as Brazilian President Lula was coming to Washington to meet with President Biden. The meeting came just over a month after supporters of Brazil's former president, far-right Jair Bolsonaro, attempted a coup by violently attacking the Supreme Court and the Brazilian Congress in Brazil's capital, Brasilia. This week, Bolsonaro announced plans to return to Brazil in March to lead the opposition. He's been living in Florida since December. We'll be posting our full interview with Davi Kopanawa Yanomami in Portuguese next week. Happy birthday to Neil Shabata. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films throughout the month of February, with a collection of films by African directors from over 16 nations.
Films will be screened at Cascade PCC, Hollywood Theater, and virtually. Full schedule and location information can be found at africanfilmfestival.org.
That's the 33rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, showing Africa through African lenses, happening February 3rd until Saturday, March 4th, in celebration of Black History Month. Full schedule and location information can be found at africanfilmfestival.org.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. And with me across the way, as opposed to on the side of the way, is the one and only Althea Billings. How are you, Althea?
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great. It sounds like you're coming in. Hopefully, if you don't, Zale hopefully will call us and let us know.
Yeah, Zale, give us a shout if this doesn't sound right. But I can hear myself.
Shout
I can hear you.
Zale.
It sounds all right to me.
I actually like this setup. I can look right into the soul windows of your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a studio configuration because we have some fun guests this morning.
Yay.
So we're doing things moderately different than normal, and in a way that the radio listener will never know the difference about. So I'm glad we've spent so much time on it.
Yes, but it is a special day, in part of the All Thrills, No Frills Volume 2.
Yes.
Although I'm saying it's Volume 3. But yeah. I know I'm not supposed to say anything about it. See, that's why you have me on the
show.
Just
you're planting the seeds.
I'm planting
of
the seeds
of how many All Thrills, No Frills it actually has been.
Volume 2.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all sorts of special programming, mm-hmm. Kicking off with Love Your Pet Day. Which
yeah,
I
on
love.
Monday.
Some special programming, some musical marathons, and some great programming and interviews like we have lined up today.
Yeah. You can check it all out at kbu.fm/thrills to see everything that's coming up in the next like month and a half or so.
Yay.
Planning things special. But hey, this is The Gap. We should say what we do here. This is talk radio on Friday mornings. We like to split our show into two parts. Sometimes we're doing a local news roundup. Today we got an interview. And in our second half is when you, the listener, can call in and chat to us about our community question. So stick around for 8:30 for that part. But are we ready, Tammy? Should I say without further ado?
Yes, you can go on ahead. We are ready for you.
Okay, without further ado, we have two wonderful guests here with us, filmmaker and director Nganji Mutiri and the African Film Festival director Aviva McClure. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for
having
me.
Thanks for having us.
We're so glad to have you here. Yay. Yeah.
We're so stoked. I was just saying, I can't remember seeing so many people in the studio since COVID-19 hit. And here we are, safe. This is why we have the configurations. Mm-hmm. But so stoked to have you here. You're visiting us from Belgium, and Aviva, you're a rock star here in town. So stoked to have you here and part of the African Film Fest, the 33rd annual African Film Fest that is happening currently, both virtual and online. Amazing stuff.
In person.
Virtual, and in person. Virtual. Oh, sorry.
Virtual, okay. Online, in person.
Virtually, online, in
on
person.
On the internet also.
Both at PCC and Hollywood Theater. So Aviva McClure, would you speak with us a little bit about the festival, its history, and your role as the director?
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, the festival started in 1991. That was the first year. The festival began at PCC Cascade with four professors. And some were professors of literature and African studies. And one of my mentors, Joseph Smith Buani, who is a professor of African film. And they started with eight films back in 91 and have been running ever since. Yeah, I think over the years, we've seen a lot of films that, you know, really have challenged Portland audiences to think deeper on a global level and also find common connections that, you know, connect all of us as humans around the world.
And I was, thinking, you said it, Portland audiences, which are not super diverse, it's, definitely changing. But I'm just thinking, what was the climate like, or what made all the folks there want to create something like this for an audience where it could be challenging?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two of the four founders are African themselves. And because of the educational nature of our film festival, the founders really wanted to bring, films so that it would engage Portland audiences and having multiple perspectives. So almost being able to travel without the travel, right? And having these cultural experiences. I think, in some ways Portland is, not as diverse as other cities, but we do have a really strong African community here. And the film festival is sometimes the one time out of the year when folks are coming together to see each other, see old friends. I think too, this is an opportunity for me. I'm diaspora, I'm Black biracial, and it's been a really cool experience to see those connections through my cultural ancestry as well.
I love that. Althea, would you have a follow-up question for that?
Sure. Can you tell us a little bit about the film festival this year? It started earlier this month. What can folks look forward to?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so we have over 20 films that we have both virtually and in person coming up, and you'll hear a little bit more about our film tonight. We have documentaries on Thursday nights, and one of our upcoming documentaries is called Music Is My Life. That's going to be on February 23rd at 7 p.m. at PCC Cascade. That is a film about Ladysmith Black Mombasa from South Africa and just the musical cultural presence. So for anyone who is interested in music and music history, that'll be a really great film. And then closing night is March 4th, and we're showing a film from a filmmaker who is Ghanaian who lives in the Bronx. That film is called Queen of Glory, and that's going to be a really great film for all audiences, intergenerational, but I think particularly for folks who are maybe in their 20s, kind of 20s, 30s, coming of age. And I think that's part of what we really hope to do in our 33rd year of the festival, is continue to reach younger audiences so that folks can grow old with the festival, as many of our audience members have over the last 30 years.
And just talking a bit more about the logistics, what is the schedule looking like as far as screenings and locations?
Yeah, thank you. So the schedule is Thursday through Saturday. All of our screenings are at 7 p.m. So tonight will be at Hollywood Theater, and then all of the rest of our screenings Thursday through Saturday will be at PCC Cascade in North Portland on Killingsworth. Our doors are open, free and open to the public. So really, folks, don't feel like you need to drop any cash to come out to our films. Like, we really just want to offer this as an opportunity. If folks aren't able to come in person for any reason, most of our films are also available online, and folks can go to the website to check those out.
And some of the films that a film that's playing tonight, actually, is Jua. Am I saying that right?
Yes, Jua, yes, correct.
Won't you tell us a bit about the film, about yourself, and I hope that you're excited about tonight.
Of course I'm excited. I'm honored, and it's a pleasure to be here, to have this collective experience. That's what I love about cinema and festivals now that we're back in person. So my name is Ngenji Mutiri. I was born in Congo and grew up there. I've been living in Belgium since 1997. As you know, now I'm a filmmaker, but I'm also a photographer, an actor, and a writer. And Jua is my first feature film. So yesterday, as I was talking with one of the four founders of the festival, she asked me, I tried to Google the meaning of Jua, and I couldn't find it. And I told her it's because, actually, phonetically, Jua means the sun in Swahili. But for poetic reason and metaphorical reasons, I didn't want write it J-U-A, because I thought, wow, if you go on Google and you type J-U-A, any article where they talk about the sun in Swahili will come up. But if I write it differently, so like the title of my film, J-U-W-A-A, if you Google or you go on the internet, you look for a film with that title, 99% of the time, you will find information about the film. So it's a family drama. I like to add psychological family drama, but I shouldn't put too much information there. Between a mother and a son, they go through a traumatic night in Congo, Kinshasa. They are separated, and 10 years after, they are reunited in Belgium. And we try to see if they can reconnect, understand who they've become, what they mean to each other. And it's also a good excuse for me to talk about art, faith, love, politics, and so I'm very excited to be tonight at the Hollywood Theater and see how, I mean, to feel the audience, because it's not always about comments, you know, verbal comments. It's just like seeing what gets people thrilled or not. So yeah, thank you again for having me, and thank you, Aviva, and thank you to the festival and Cable Radio.
Yay, thank you. We are all thrills, no frills, happy to have you here. And it's really, really great. I'm very excited to have this conversation. And going back even to the name, because my family is also African, I find that a lot of times trying to explain the nuances of like culture, or you know how they say like some things are kept behind closed doors, or like there's some things that you don't share in mixed company, quote unquote. Did you have like any challenges like that of maybe like revealing too much about like the inner working of your own like culture, like like familiar something?
I had a little bit of that because, as I said, now I live in Belgium, and because of the lack of representation, sometimes even if somebody means well, they might come to you like, oh, but you're doing a film in an African country. Why don't you show this? What that? And I'm like, this is, influenced by the idea that, okay, every time you want to talk about Africa, it should be like maybe safari trip and animals or extreme poverty and war. But I'm like, even if, of course, there are people going through hardship, I want to tell a human story based on African characters. And I had to sometimes fight through that intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, to try to do justice to not only the women I grew up with, but also African people I know, Black people I know, and show them in their humanity, the nuance, the complexity. And sometimes it was my friend that will help me when I was about to give up that part of the script that was maybe too complicated for one of, I don't know, the producers or somebody else. And sometimes I had to remember all the filmmakers, no matter where they come from. And I love long interviews because they give me tools. I'm a self-taught filmmaker, so I rely on those making-ofs, behind-the-scenes, podcasts, interviews. And whether I'm talking about Mira Nair, whether I'm talking about Sidney Lumet, like for instance, I don't know if I can name books and
yeah,
things.
Please,
like. But I love it when filmmakers tell you, okay, I won't tell you how to make films. I'll tell you how I did it. So I want to start there as well. I'm telling a story based on what inspires me in people around me. And I'm not telling you this is Africa, this is Congo, this is us Black people. This is just my version of what I could tell with the budget we had, with my first feature film. I feel like my main mission as an artist is to try to find the link or the differences between what is very singular to me and what is universal. And that's why I love this collaborative effort that is to make a film. So, you know, I start with one version of the script and then my younger sister, Malkia, will probably read it and be like, the female character here, well, that makes no sense. And you're like, oh, okay, let me go back and write a second version. And then you talk maybe to an older person. And so I love this collaborative effort in front of the camera, behind the camera, the lead actors, Baptida Sajo, Edson, Francisco Luzemo, Adi Batista, and the others. They were also the best advocates of the characters. Because for me, it's like I just give like a frame or a spine, and then they are the one bringing, you know, blood, sweat, tears, muscles. And I really love that. I always find it kind of unfair that, you know, on movie posters, there's usually like two or three names. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go, hopefully, on IMDb or to read who works, because it's really like, I like to say it takes a village to raise a film. I don't know if I answered your question, because I could be like, I love, I could be talking for a while, but that's about it.
Definitely, yeah. Althea?
Well, you mentioned that this is your first feature film.
Yes.
Were there, and you were talking about sort of the creative process, were there aspects of creating this feature film that were different from other experiences you had, different things you did this time around?
Yes, one of the main aspects is, I mean, there are two aspects. One, I had a budget. Before that, all my short films were auto-produced, sometimes with no budget at all. And it's the first film that I write and direct where I'm not operating the camera. So it's Quentin de Villers, who is French-Belgian. I say French originally, but he's been living in Belgium for a while, who is the director of photography. And it was interesting to find somebody you can trust with the way he's going to lead people with a darker skin color. But once you're on his website and you see the work, it's already reassuring. So we just prepared the film with the mood boards and some pictures I like. And we did some camera tests. And then I could totally trust him. And I remember in the beginning, I was like, no, I want to have creative control and film and do this and that. And usually I also do the editing of my film. But on a feature film, I mean, I had to learn to trust the actors, the artistic team, the technical team, and the producers to go there. So those were some of the new elements that I hope made me grow up as an artist, as a human being.
Well, I can imagine that that pushes you to relinquish some of that control and also to, you know, trust, yeah, entrust your vision into others.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's, yeah, you summarized it for me.
And I wonder when you're able to relinquish that control and you're able to trust other people and build that village, how does that shape you as a filmmaker?
As a filmmaker, one of the things I love is that you can actually focus on telling or improving your story when you're rewriting the script. Mm. And then there's also just something about, I like to say you're the captain of the ship. And sometimes the best decisions come from a place of, I like to say it's quiet in my mind. I'm like, I'm also in good hands, because sometimes you think like the director is the one who I'm managing everybody. But sometimes like, no, I trust my team. Mm. And now I can clearly see, oh, we need a third take for that sequence, because some of the elements I was thinking about, or for instance, Agathe Hervieux was the script. I don't know if that's exactly what we say in English, but she's like following the screenplay, and she reminds me sometimes, like, oh, you know, for the transition to that other scene, mm, we still need, for instance, the actor to look right at the end of the sequence. So it gives us a smooth transition to the other scene. So because I feel like I'm in good hand, and they're in good hand, I can focus on how am I telling the story, because for me, at the core of every art is the emotions. For me, I like to, whether it's music, whether it's painting, whatever it is, I want to feel something before I start intellectualizing things. And sometimes it's like that. You have that village, trusted village, different colors, different genders, sexual preferences, religion on set, and we're like, we in this together, so I can do my job. It's like, am I telling the story that brings the emotions that I want? And usually experienced filmmakers, what I take also as an inspiration is like, when you're a little bit lost, remember what type of film you want to experience as an audience member. Mm. And I remember there are some scenes that hopefully some of the listeners will discover collectively tonight at the Hollywood Theater. There are some scenes where I was like, oh, while writing this script, I was like, well, when are we going to shoot that scene? It's very emotional. How will I trust myself with the right decision, when to call cut and things? And sometimes I was just like, even on set, I want to cry. If I'm not crying, that means I'm not believing what I'm seeing. And if I don't believe what I'm seeing, the audience won't believe. So it's all that was not only the learning process, but again, I think that not only the people I work with on the film, but basically every film teams of every film I saw. Because that's, for me as a self-taught filmmaker, I'm like, my school is every film, every short film, every music video I will watch. So I mean, I could do a thank you list that will have no end because of that. And the audience also, that's, I like to say, when I watch a film in an audience, whether it's my film or somebody else's film, this collective experience gives me, I like to say, it gives me fuel for my soul to go on with the next stories. And so I'm very excited about tonight, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And going back to tonight, what time and where can people find more about your film?
It's tonight at 7 at the Hollywood Theater. Be there maybe like 30 minutes, because it's, how you say the expression? First?
First come, first serve. Doors open at 6:30.
Okay.
And Mike Crenshaw, who I know is a good friend of KBOO, will be hosting and interviewing Ngangi after the film. We also have Face King, who is a Ghanaian rapper, who's going to be there as well, opening up the house. So we're really stoked.
Oh, yeah. You have all the KBOO all-star lines.
Yeah, I'll say too that Mike Johnson is behind the scenes, so I got to give Mike a big holler for running sound.
Wow, good for us. We're out here. I love this collaboration. Like, it takes a village, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
Althea, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask a little bit more specifically, because Ngangi, you were talking about it. What do you hope people walk away with from this film, you know, experience tonight? I know it's also available online.
I mean, we were talking about it earlier with Aviva and my partner Bisrat here. We were talking about, it's about family, not only the the family we are born in, or we say in, mm-hmm. or within mm-hmm. the family we are born in. But the chosen family is like, we all have, as a character says it in the film, some things that we silence and that are hurting and killing us from inside. And it's about finding the right person and muster the courage or the inspiration to talk to that person. Sometimes it's a family member, sometimes it's a friend, sometimes it's a stranger. So I hope people get away with the almost like the urgency to be like, you know, this thing that is really hurting me from inside. If I see what those characters on screen, the mother and political journalist, investigative journalist, played by Baptida Saggio, so Riziki, and Amani, portrayed by Edson Anibal, the mother and son relationship, I hope it inspires some to be like, oh, I kind of have that element of incomprehension with my brother, with my auntie, with my uncle, and I need to talk to them because there's some therapeutic things that were going on behind the scene and also on the camera that helped me keep doing art. So we need to talk, we need to solve this, because I believe that the more we are truthful with who we are, not only on the external, on our action, but who we are inside, the better we contribute in healing ourselves individually and then collectively. So that's why I will say it's mainly try to find those persons you need to talk to and lift the weight that you've been carrying for traumatic elements, whether they're the traumatic stories we see in the media or not. Sometimes it's the tiny little thing that happened maybe when you were 15 that has been a burden. So it's like, let's talk. Let's not let those things kill us from inside.
If they say hurt people, I guess that yes. only means heal people.
Exactly. Well, I love that.
It's the math. It's that. Yeah. Going back to the film festival, how did y'all connect with one another? How did this happen?
I will just say that I've received a wonderful email telling me about the Cascade Festival of African Films. They love Jua, and as a filmmaker, that's the best email that's the email you're wishing for. And then on top of that, oh yeah, then we're gonna invite you in Portland. I'm like, oh, I've never been to Portland. And so Aviva McClure, thank you again for writing that email.
And thank you for hanging through so many emails in that thread.
My pleasure.
Our festival is mostly volunteer run. So staff is just myself and Eugenie Jolivet Fontana, who's the associate director. And over the summer, we meet with our committee members. Some of them have been involved for many years. Some are newer to the festival. And over the summer, we watched like 100 films, and we make our selection from there. Jua was a film where we had our week to watch our chunk of films. We all came back, and everyone wanted to talk about Jua. Mm. All of us had chills, you know? So we knew right then that this is our centerpiece film. This is a big deal film, you know?
For sure. And so what's that process like? Do people submit it to you, or do you... You just see a film and you're like, I gotta call that, you know, director and get him on here.
Thank you for asking. So it's a little of both. We have a film submission that opens in April, and that's on Film Freeway, which I think a lot of filmmakers are familiar with, where folks can submit. We also do some research where we look around at international and African film festivals around the world and country. Mm-hmm. Our festival is the oldest, longest running African film festival in the country. So, yeah. Yes. but we have great relationships with other film festivals. And so when we're able to, we'll go attend festivals either virtually or in person to experience films, you know, starting as soon as the festival is over. We're already looking for next year's films.
Right. Yeah. You said April. That's in 2 months, less than 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we had a film last night, for example, I Am Samuel, mm-hmm. which was a film with such a powerful story connected to coming out as a gay man in Kenya. And that film by Peter Marimi was a film that we knew about for 2 years, but we kind of wanted to wait until we had other films with an LGBTQ theme to bring that film in. So a lot of what we do as a committee too is try to find that perfect moment where we have like a theme or a connection so that we can deepen the conversation throughout the festival.
And do all the films have Q&As, or is that just for most of them? How does that work?
Yeah, the Q&As, we try to have a Q&A after each film, and sometimes we're blessed to have the director here in person or virtually on a Zoom interview. So, for example, Music Is My Life, February 23rd, I interviewed the director and the producer virtually. So that will be kind of generating our live discussion after the film. We'll watch the interview and then we'll have a live discussion. And then last night, for example, with I Am Samuel, we had folks from Q Center and other community leaders that led the conversation in a panel. So yes, we tried to, for every film, have a discussion afterwards.
Awesome. Althea, do you want to?
Well, yeah, if folks are interested in finding out more about Jua, which is playing tonight, or the rest of the film fest, what's the best way for them to do that?
Awesome. Thanks for asking. Please check out www.africanfilmfestival.org. Yes, we're that old that we have that that domain name. So there you'll find the whole schedule. And just remember, it's free and open to the public. We'd love to see y'all.
That's so great. And I guess you said this is your first time in Portland.
Yes.
What are your impressions? You got a little bit of sunshine.
Not only the weather is not as bad as I heard it will be, mm-hmm. and we've been enjoying some food. Tomorrow we'll go at the Vista.
The gorge, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and feeling the energy of the people. So it's like eating, it's walking, and visiting the spot that are like best known, but also like, you know, to get lost somewhere and end up somewhere I didn't expect to, and just interact with people. And I love the fact that, you know, we're coming from New York. I was in New York 2 or 3 days ago. And being here kind of remind me the energy of where I grew up. I grew up in the east of Congo, Bukavu. So when I grew up, by that time, so from 1980 to 1996, it's not a very crowded place. So I feel that also here in Portland, to compare to, let's say, New York, mm-hmm. if I want to compare to a Congolese city, I'd say Kinshasa is very crowded. And so I'm at peace, and I just had a great interaction so far. So I'll continue. I hope it will continue like that.
We're so thrilled to have you host y'all here in Kibu, Portland's oldest community radio station.
Wow.
Yay. And I'm so excited to put that out there. And I'm so stoked about this collaboration with Mike Crenshaw, interviewing, doing the Q&A tonight, and King Face. And this is so great. Thank you so much, Aviva. And what was that website one more time?
www.africanfilmfestival.org. And thank you all, too. KBOO is so important to our community. So we're just so stoked to have your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And we are going to go on a quick musical break, and we'll be back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lome, loma, eloma, loma, lome, eloma, lome n'est jamais satisfait, lome n'est jamais satisfait. Et sa condition, condition, il a envie toujours la condition de son prochain. Condition, ni condition. Que va? L'homme blanc veut devenir noir. Il se met au soleil, croyant noir, s'il m'entend qu'il se bronze. L'homme noir veut devenir blanc. Il utilise des produits ambimo vatagoraya blanchir maintenant s'éclaircir.
Les zones et les rouges, ça envie aussi, mais tout est le manque. Et c'est cette envie-là qui a engendré la jalousie, les jalousies. Et de celle-ci, le racisme, ni un racisme. Pourquoi moi j'ai dit racisme, yo yo? Pourquoi racisme, yo yo? L'homme, quand il a compris que jamais il ne changera, l'homme noir restera noir, le blanc restera blanc, le jaune restera jaune, le rouge restera rouge, oui. Alors l'homme s'est fâché, il est devenu un raciste, ni un raciste. Et l'homme blanc me dira, je n'aime pas l'homme noir, menteur, tu as échoué dans ta mission de te noircir. Et l'homme noir me dira, je n'aime pas l'homme blanc ni menteur, tu as échoué dans ta mission de te blanchir. L'homme comparable à l'éléphant qui a dit, mais sans boule à boule, mais au monde a beaucoup d'enfants, pourquoi pas moi? Et c'est l'éléphant est capable de vous donner un petit nombre.
And we are back. I really enjoyed that song. Althea, what is it called again?
It's called Lom.
Lom, not La Home.
No, it's a French title. Lom. But Nganji recommended the song to us.
Oh, yes. And he was explaining to us what it means, and oh, man, it's beautiful. Yes, African Film Fest happening tonight. So
yes,
exciting.
Very exciting. Glad we got to talk with folks.
And we are sliding it. We're both a little bit out of breath.
Both of us are
panting so hard
because we're jogging around the station trying to make sure that they get out of here. Okay.
Making sure everyone got stickers. That was
my
thing.
Yeah, get one.
You
hurry.
Get a sticker.
Get back on air.
But we are back in the gap here at KBOO, part two of
part
the program.
Dose, yes.
Where we open up the phone lines to you, the listener, to become a caller.
Yes.
And oh boy, Althea. We're going to just sit down and listen to Althea go off for a minute and a half about what's going on. Yes, please go ahead.
Well, I teased it a little bit on our social media at The Gap Radio on Instagram. Renee Gonzalez. Sorry, let me state the facts before I interject my feelings about it. Renee Gonzalez prohibits his department from handing out tents and tarps to people, Portlanders, who need them. What does that include? That includes the fire department. It includes Portland Street Response. Why, you ask? Why on this week of below freezing days would we be not letting people have tents, which are quite literally life-saving? Mm-hmm. He says it's because there's too many fires. The fire department says there's too many fires. It's dangerous for firefighters. It's dangerous for houseless people. It's dangerous for neighbors. This is okay. Now I'm getting into the starting the facts. Trace it back. I'm sorry. I'm gonna get too fired up. Trace it back to where this started, which is the fire department complaining about there being too many fires mm-hmm. over the summer.
I remember.
And they
that.
Were saying, and Willamette Week picked it up, acted like it was fact, and did not check their numbers. Which, mind you, for 3 years worth, 8% of their calls were quote-unquote homeless-related. Which, what does homeless-related mean? Great question. I don't know. That's just like, maybe that's what they said. Like, I think a homeless person did this when they got the call. Or there were homeless people in the area. But it can also, and probably does, include situations where folks who are living on the street had arson done to them. Mm-hmm. Like, people going around spraying lighter fluid on your stuff and lighting it on fire. That there's Street Roots did a report with someone who that had happened to multiple times mm-hmm. and that all of these would be under the same umbrella. A very like 8% of calls over 3 years. The fire marshal says, I got 1,000 calls complaining this year.
Doesn't sound like that was...
Where does that number come from?
Is that, yeah, where's that number?
But turn the clock back, because this was in August. This was setting the laying the groundwork in August for this. The fire department doesn't endorse Joanne Hardesty for re-election. Renee Gonzalez gets her seat. And now he's going after street response, which is...
I told you.
You did. It boggles the mind. It boggles the mind because street response is one of the only things that works in this dang town. Mm-hmm. Can I say? And the other thing is, like, of every other public service that has so little accountability, that the fire department is putting out numbers that don't make numbers and data that doesn't line up. The police force, don't get me started on the police force, okay? Street response is measured every 6 months with a lot of data by PSU, and it is successful, and it's relationship building. And the only problem is that they don't have more people to do more, because what they're doing is important. And it's also the only real meaningful step that this city has had to take a chunk out of the 2014 settlement with the Department of Justice that said that Portland police are killing too many people with mental illness who are living on the street. And we were supposed to be out from under that court order in 2021. No, that did not happen. We've been trying to get body cams that whole time. And right now it's finally going to arbitration between the police union and the city about trying to have just any step in the direction of not killing people who are experiencing mental illness. This is a step in that direction. And now Renee Gonzalez, why, you know?
Because he is backed by developers, and that's why. I mean, listen, I'm just going to say this. If all of us got a 96% discount to our monthly rent, there'd be no housing issue. And just to contextualize it, why did I pick the 96%?
Well, it doesn't come from nowhere.
It doesn't come from, unlike the numbers that the fire department is making up, it is the percent that Rene Gonzalez got, or his offices got, for offices downtown.
Would you believe that quote unquote handouts of real estate,
that's that trickle down economy,
that's,
I guess
that's the trickle. If you know Jordan Schnitzer, it's a trickle down economy.
It trickle down all over. I am looking because you mentioned Street Roots as just the work that they do, and I'm looking right here at the latest PSU Homeless Research and Action Collaborative, because they're the ones that released a Portland Street Response Evaluation Report. And the last one was from December 15th. And man, like these numbers, it's like these are great numbers.
Those are things that are making a difference.
These are things that they respond to 3,000 incidents, which is 700% more. And there's more people, so they're able to cover more of this. So there's less chance of, you know, police interaction with someone mm-hmm. who is having a mental breakdown, and
they or is just existing outside,
or just existing,
right? Because
and
that's
not,
what a lot of the calls are. That was what was leading to a lot of police interactions.
These numbers are really great.
The numbers are good. And here, can I say another point, right? Because there's also, you know, it's like, well, the city keeps handing out tents and tarps, but you know, why don't people already have them or whatever? It's well, also because the city goes through and just sweeps the things that they gave people. Mm-hmm. They throw them in the trash and I don't even feel like we have time to get into all of the different ways that sweeps are
inhumane and
cruel and illogical, because it is both. But it's just
I want to
who you elected, Portland. I'm gonna call him a schmuck, okay? He's a schmuck, he's a stooge, okay? And to unseat Joanne Hardesty, who brought this change to Portland, who made the like it's just so meaningful, like she did something that matters, and now he's going to try to pull it apart.
I mean, this is also the same person that was putting up fake or disinformation maps on social media.
Oh yeah,
taking it off. Like,
yeah,
this is
disinformation
really
about fires, about all of those kinds of things,
shootings and stuff.
And the fire, like it's such imprecise data, so as to be meaningless. Mm. Okay, because homeless related can mean so many things, and they're just saying it's like, well, people are trying to keep warm, so that's bad. It's like, you're not understand. First of all, that's not happening that often. And two, like, why are they trying to keep warm? Is it because it's below freezing and the county is not opening warming shelters?
It's that thing where we both see the same thing, but we process it just differently for some reason, where it's like, that's, and it, again, I'm just going to say, if I personally had a 96% discount on my rent, I could pay someone else's rent that's also discounted at 96%.
Yeah.
And we could all do that. Like, is that socialism? Oh, my God.
It's wild. It's wild. And, yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing about, like, housing and homelessness is that it's, and we've said this many times on the show, it's a complex issue. Complex problems require complex solutions, require multi-pronged solutions, you know? Street response is just one of those, and it's made a difference. So why are you trying to tear it apart? Jealousy? I don't know.
This is coming from the same office that was like, let's just make three huge concentration camps.
We should, yeah, we should probably do that. And
so this is
we should actually shell out to sort of an out-of-state company $51 million a year, when for half of that, we could just house everybody that needs it. Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah, he is mentioning Urban Alchemy there.
Yeah,
California,
sorry.
This
Google
is...
it. But you look, people can still write to him, you know, this. But I mean, the thing that just infuriates me is like turning the clock back, seeing where the breadcrumbs were started. And talk about our year's theme, get it in writing. Mm. He was getting it in writing. Mm-hmm. The fire department was laying the groundwork for street response to be dismantled back in August, when it's the one thing that works.
We got DeLorenzo'd. That's what I feel
like. We got DeLorenzo'd. So anyway, all of this rant somewhat concluding. Let's open the phones. We want to... Tammy, you came up with a positive spin.
Sure. Since there is... I was thinking about... We had a Lisa Loving on a couple of weeks ago. And we had a conversation, and she'd mentioned something about whoever is getting folks who are houseless... registered to vote, let me know and talk to me. And I was thinking about, oh, that is, let me look into that. So the Secretary of State, they have ways of people to actually help folks who are dealing with houselessness and collecting, registering people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of got me on a rabbit hole. And I'm like, oh, there's actually like a heck ton of social services and initiatives or groups, you know, that are doing the work, and it's up to us as the host of the GAF to get their work out here so that people are aware of it and hopefully breathe more life into it.
Yeah.
So the community question is, what community-led groups, orgs, or initiatives do you think could have the biggest impact on our community? Who do you see doing the work.
Even individuals.
Phone lines are open.
Yeah, 503-231-8187. We want to know what you think about it. I've said this before on the show, too, but I will mention it again. Obviously, that Portland voters did pass Measure 26228, the charter reform to reform city government. That gives me some amount of solace that we are moving towards a more fair and representative government that will... not concentrate power in the hands of the few, that at the very least it'll be more expensive for the Portland Business Alliance to purchase what they want to happen. So that is one thing. But I think it's also important for us to stay vigilant about that process as it's continuing, because there's still a long way till 2025 and a lot of griping from current city councilors who at one point said that they wanted this change. But other folks that we see doing the work, please let us know. 503-231-8187.
And we have Barth on the line with us. Barth, can you hear us?
I can, thank you. I got some of the African Film Fest stuff. That was very good, and thanks for pushing that. The numbers from the fire department, which you're calling out as suspect, they may be suspect, but the fire department's mandate includes traffic accidents, medical response, you know, if somebody fell off their bike, got bumped by a car, or were ill, you know, just somebody passed out or thrown up or whatever, they have a fire department response. That's going to bump the number. So it's not that all of these calls are somebody, some houseless person either being the victim of or the perpetrator of a fire situation. A lot of it's going to be the things that they're kind of working against right now with turning back the tents and the medical care for the homeless and et cetera. You know, that's more emergency room trips and more first response by fire department and ambulance. That's all.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that clarification. I believe they said 480 calls were quote-unquote homeless-related fires, but I agree with what you're saying, that their call number can be influenced by other stuff. I think it's why don't we have more specific data? Why wouldn't we want to know specifically what those calls are about? And what does that data show? You know, if we do have it, what does that indicate? And why can't we act off of what is the truth, you know, instead of these generalizations that can be painted one way or another?
Well, you know, 50% of people that use statistics make them up, so.
I like that. Appreciate that.
I like that. Thank you.
I'm taking that one to the bank. You take care.
If other folks want to call, please, 503-231-8187. Who's doing the work, you know? Let's hit a positive spin.
Yes.
What is being done? We want to know. 503-231-8187.
Yeah, are you doing something? Do you know, is your neighbor doing something? Do you donate to a cause that you're like, this is people doing the work? Is there an initiative that's happening, creepy crawling its way up that you think will be the way to get our community safer, healthier, stronger?
Stronger, yeah.
Who's doing the work? 503-231-8187. You mentioned Street Roots, definitely.
Yeah. Shout out
they are doing the work, and
they have fabulous reporting. I get to interview them every week, and I enjoy it.
And I see it. They're over here and making reels too now on Instagram. I see you.
Oh, are
I
they?
See Street Roots. Yep, they got the reels going on. I don't know if they got a little Instagram manager or something, but it's looking good. It's looking good. I'm friends with the Free Fridge folks.
Mm.
Yes. Whoa, we got a bunch of people calling. I'll
all
see
right,
you. Take
yeah.
it away.
If other folks want to call, please, 503-231-8187. Who's doing the work right now? What is happening in your community, in our community, that we should know about so as not to despair about silly things that are happening, because some of them are counterintuitive and frustrating to watch. It is always an option to contact your legislator. Can I say that? I would love to sort of communicate that it is always possible to register community thoughts on this kind of thing. And I think also like noticing where do changes come from? And it's not, you know, as Tammy mentioned, trickle-down economics. You know, it is community support. It's a grassroots upswell based on things that are important. And like just framing it around how can we make people's lives better in the most incremental ways.
One word, together.
Together.
And we have Edie on the line. Edie, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. I was saying that folks that are linking the dots of social justice, environmental justice, housing, police accountability, government transparency, having a new just transition where we have an economy that is good for everyone, is the climate justice groups who are fighting the oil bomb trains. Like you saw, what we saw in Ohio is nothing. It's not even a teeniest one thousandth of what would happen in Portland, and the efforts to close down Zenith. This Monday at Colonel Sumner's Park of Belmont and 21st from 1 to 4 p.m. will be people with a potluck, music, arts, crafts, free zines, getting together, planning, in solidarity with the folks who are trying to save the forest in Atlanta, Georgia, from becoming a cop city for a training ground to use all of our towns, all of our homeless camps, every city as a war zone for making more profits for the fossil fuel industry. So,
and where is this again?
Could you give us the time and place one more time?
Monday, February 20th, Colonel Sumner's Park, Southeast 21st in Belmont, from 1 to 4 p.m.
1 to 4.
So people who care about indigenous rights, African-American rights, houseless housing rights, police accountability, taking our money from the war industry into the survival industry, they're all linking together across political, religious, cultural continuums because we're in this together. So please join them, and there's always something you can do to stop the oil bomb train, the oil shipments, the fracking, the earthquakes here in Portland. So start. Get together. And after you have fun doing that, go out to Mississippi Tuesday Mardi Gras evening and have safety and solidarity with the African-American community and the diaspora. Enjoy.
Thank you so much, Edie.
Thank you.
Really giving us the breakdown. Okay, thank you so much. And we have Sherry on the line. Sherry, can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, Sherry.
Loud and clear.
Hi. So, the show, I was telling Althea that I'm Sherry Morris. I'm going to start a show in March. Well, we're bringing our show to Kibu in March. But in the meantime, I wanted to tell you about Katrina Holland and Join PDX. I did an interview with her last month for the show when it was at Willamette Falls Media Center. Join PDX takes either, they offer wraparound services to homeless people. They have helped 500 people get into housing. They work through a system called master leasing. Look up Kevin Kavanaugh. He's a master leasing professional in the area. And what they do is they pay the residents or the newly housed person's rent for a given amount of time until they get on their feet. They help them find jobs, get any kind of counseling, treatment, or whatever services they might need. They helped actually 1,800 people last year with services. 500 of those they got housed. And they're out every night. They help homeless people get blankets and food and all kinds of things that they need. And you can go to joinpdx.org for more details and get in touch with Katrina Holland. She is the executive director. Fabulous woman. I am promoting the heck out of these people because they do crazy good work all over Portland. And I'm hoping to have her on for another interview when we get to the station.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Sherry. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I love you guys.
Have a good one. Appreciate you.
This is so great. I'm learning so much about our communities and yeah, join. Great stuff. And we have one more caller, April, on the line. April, can you hear us?
Oh, yes. So I just wanted to call up and say, you guys, you just had a really good interview with the guy from the African Film Festival, and you talked about how it was started. And one of those people was Michael Dembro, who was a teacher at PCC, and he's now a senator. And for quite a while here in Portland, he had like monthly town halls where people could actually go and talk about their issues. And those were a really good place to connect things and then have him take them back to the legislature. So I thought that was really a good thing. And, you know, it's neat that he worked his way up from being a teacher and, you know, helping to start the African Film Festival and then get into politics from there. And the other thing is there's a group called APANO. I don't remember exactly what it stands for, but they're Asian and Pacific Islanders, and they have built an apartment house on, like, 82nd Division, I think. And I have done a lot of stuff with them, and they do a lot of good community building, door knocking and talking to people and stuff like that. And then the other thing is Joanne Hardesty, which when people talk about her, they talk about the good work she did with Portland Street Response, which we're now talking about, and on the city council, but and with police abuse. But I don't know if they remember a whole lot about when she was like a Northeast Portland representative. I mean, that was 25, 30 years ago. But she has really been involved. And before before she was ever, you know, involved in police abuse or the city council, I remember like seeing her all the time at all the protests I went to. And she worked with Oregon Action for a while, too. Mm-hmm. So that's somebody who's really been a long-term activist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope to hear more from her.
Yeah, thank you for reminding us all that. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, April.
Yeah, yeah, this is a great show. Good question.
I appreciate you.
Thanks.
Just a quick shout out. APANO is the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon.
This is great.
For folks who may not know.
I'm learning so much.
Yeah.
I want to shout out again, Free Fridge, Join, Street Roots, the folks
Eviction Representation for All.
Yes. Also, Imagine ballots. Black. Love Imagine working Black. With those folks.
Yeah.
You got the Lunch Collective, forget what is it, like PDX Lunch something, I forget.
Yeah.
Matzah Block, shout out. I could keep going on and on. All the anarchists and anarchists that are doing the thing. I said it.
We gotta wrap this up, huh?
Yeah, we have to. I don't want to, but we do.
I'm having a good time. What a fabulous show. Thank you again to Nganji and Aviva for being a part of it. Thank you to everybody who called. I'm Althea.
I'm Tammy, and I'll see you next week.
This has been The Gap.
Take
see you
care.
Friday.
Bye.
Streaming online at KBOO.FM.
Here at KBOO, we'll be kicking off our winter drive on February 20th, which happens to be National Love Your Pet Day. Isn't this a heartwarming and fun holiday? We want to ask you to please